Hi everybody, you're listening to The Rope Podcast with Vox and Maya. Thanks for supporting the show.
This is a show with adult content, so if you are not of legal age where you live, then turn off now.
Rope bondage is a risky activity, and you shouldn't attempt it without first getting proper training. Listen to episode 0 if you haven't already.
Fox is a rigger and Maya is a bottom. We are long-term rope partners who live in Bangkok, Thailand. We love to share our passion for rope with the wider community.
This episode is made possible by our patrons who support us each month. If you would like to help, head to ropepodcast.com to see many options.
This year, we want to focus on bringing the Rope Podcast to a wider audience. To achieve that, we would like to ask you to follow us on Instagram and reshare this episode in your Instagram stories. We are Rope Podcast on Instagram.
Another thing that helps us is if you give us a star rating on Apple Podcasts. It's anonymous, so you won't have your name visible on the internet connected with a kinky podcast, don't worry. And now going on with the show.
This is the second part of our interview with Anna Noctuel, and if you haven't caught the first part yet, it is the episode right before this one. Now back with Anna.
What would you say have been the biggest changes for you in the way that you experience rope from when you started until now? Because it sounds like already there's a lot happening in there and you've made a lot of efforts to be more vulnerable and let go. How have those changes taken form?
With aging and having a very acute body awareness right from the start, you don't lose that. I still have that very acute body awareness. And I know that my aging process also changes my ability to or inability to do certain things, right? Your bones become thinner and a bit pointier, and all of a sudden the futos are a bit harder than they used to be, and you take longer to recover from back problems or from very, you know, compressed back bends or whatever. You will feel that for a week. All sorts of things. The hormonal levels have a huge impact. You feel much more vulnerable in certain stages of your cycle than you did. You have to work harder for things, also mentally. Your awareness for risk flips around. You're much more risk aware. You become more careful and you even become more scared of things. Whereas beforehand, I would go into things like, yeah, what's the worst that can happen? With the body I had, I could rely on my body. That was all pretty predictable. Whereas now I can't rely on the boxes of experiences that I've built in my brain anymore that well. So I have to kind of go through the whole process of evaluating where my limits are again. At the moment, I'm in a period, I'm in perimenopause, where that changes a lot. It's an interesting process, and it makes you, to come back to your question, it makes you feel more vulnerable and it makes you question yourself more. And on the one hand, that's a very good thing if you embrace that, but you also have to communicate that a little bit more, I think, because you communicate that in front of yourself and also obviously in front of the people who tie with you, because everyone's got a picture of you in mind and it's very hard to go in and not make assumptions of someone. That's the one thing. And making assumptions of yourself as well, right? On the other hand, it's a difficult balance because I think for people my age, I'm still pretty fit. So where I'm thinking, okay, I'm 40% less resistant in certain things, I'm still probably very resistant compared to other people with other forms of background or not a regular yoga practice. But yeah, I've become a bit more careful, for sure.
Physically. Speaking of being careful, Anna, during those almost 20 years you've been doing rope, did you have to contend with any injuries?
I've had injuries from rope, all the classic stuff. I've had wrist drop in both hands. I've had a foot drop. I have numb thighs regularly from a rope that's placed too high. Nowadays, I don't do hip harnesses anymore, so that has decreased a little bit. But I've got the femoral nerve going over my hip bone instead of underneath. So, yeah,
okay. I can see
I think it's 5% of people who have that, and I'm I belong to the unlucky 5%, so I deal with numb thighs on a regular basis, which is fine by me. So yeah, I've had injuries. Interestingly enough, they all happened either during rehearsal or in performances or photo shoots or video shoots. We all are very prone to have injuries happen then because we work in environments that we are not used to, in maybe climatic situation we are not used to. Often in at locations it's very cold, so that in and of itself gives you a higher injury risk. Or you are under time pressure and you just skip necessary safety precautions and you just think, oh, I'm going to be fine. And in the end, you're not. Or you just ignore warning signs. Especially in the beginning, that happened a lot because I was just under the impression I'll battle things through things. And I can't recommend doing that for anyone. But when we are young, we tend to think we're indestructible. This is what happened. And I try to learn from injuries as well and to also acknowledge that they leave a mark on you. So when you have a wrist drop, and I've never had a really bad one, so my strength came back the next day or the day after. And I've been very, very lucky with this. But it leaves your whole somatic experience. You're more careful. You are traumatized to a certain extent, and you have to kind of go back to square one in a certain degree and find your limits very, very slowly again and see, okay, until where can I go? I also think when injuries happen, it's a 50-50 responsibility. I'm as responsible for my injuries as the partner I'm tying with, because we both, for some things, I was even the person who said, oh, you can drop me into that futu, that's not a problem, we don't have time, let's just do that. And if an injury comes out of that, that's my responsibility. I even came up with that stupid idea, right? So yeah, I think dealing with it and kind of taking on your responsibility is important in that.
I think that's true, but I would note that the power differential is different between different rope couples. Like, it sounds like you have quite an egalitarian top-bottom relationship with your riggers. Would that be the case?
I know the abilities of people, and I hand over control in relation to what we can do together and to what extreme we can go together. If someone is not as good and as secure in what they're doing, I take on more responsibility to keep myself safe. And if I have someone that I know I can trust and I know they are good enough to bring me to the absolute edge of things, then I wouldn't speak up, and then I just trust that. But again, that is then also my responsibility. If I decide not to say anything, that is my responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's my decision not to. Because obviously we all play and we all have, you know, we all have a veto and we all have a safe word and we all can get out of any situation if we wanted to. But yeah, it really depends on the relationship with the person and on the abilities. Absolutely.
And some of those injuries are, as I know well, very terrifying, like very affecting emotionally. How did you deal with one of those? Like, talk us through what your process was.
So for example, the wrist drop that I had, which I had in both hands, and it was very telling because it was a shoot, it was a video shoot, and on the first day I had it in my right hand, and on the second day of the shoot I had it in my left hand. After the first day, after things happened, it was also extremely cold in that location, I have to say. But it was a very, very long time ago, and it was in the early days of my rope journey. So I was inexperienced, I didn't have a lot of experience, and B, it was a time when you wouldn't tie harnesses according to your models. You would tie harnesses because you learned them a certain way. Back then, I was in Osada Steve harness, and it had upper canoe keys. And after I went home after the shoot in the evening. I went home, and also there was no real education. So having a wrist drop is something I had to research on the internet, on all sorts of other platforms rather than rope. There were no people around who could give me some form of advice or experience or whatever. So I went on the internet and I had a look and I researched and I looked at pictures and I pieced the information together by myself. And then I came to the conclusion it must have been the upper Kanukis. And then I called the person I was tying with and I said, look, I really think the upper Kanukis are a problem. And I said, can we tie a TK that has no upper Kanukis? And he was like, no, that's impossible. You can't tie a TK without upper Kanukis because that's not safe.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, that shows you how far we've come, because I think hardly anyone ties TKs with upper Kanukis anymore because it poses so many problems for so many people. What happened on the second day after I got problems with my other wrist is kind of we untied the TK in the air, and that looked really nice as well, but it didn't save me from wrist drop, which it was fine. It came back very quickly.
And for people who don't know, what are the symptoms of wrist drop? What is wrist drop? What does it feel like for the bottom?
So, again, it's very, very hard to give rules that serve all. There are rules that serve most people, which is you get, you might get tingling, located tingling in the thumb and the forefinger, which I usually don't get. What happens to me is I get a numb patch that's growing from the lower part of my underarm into the thumb and into the forefinger in a triangular shape. And that's kind of a surefire sign that the radial is compressed. That doesn't have to result in a motoric injury, in a motoric problem, but it can. So when I get numb patches, I usually change position or want to change position or want to have the reps redressed or to just get rid of that pressure. Because I also know that then I have to kind of watch that all the time and I don't want to. People sometimes say, I still hear that if you start feeling that your hand moves through honey and you have trouble getting your wrist up or making a thumbs up, that this is a warning sign. And I'm just thinking this is when already motoric injury has started and it's too late to say something then. You also have to account for how long does it take your rigor to get you out of that situation. And if you're not very experienced, it might be difficult for you to assess how long it will take someone to get you out of a certain situation. So you have to take all of these things into account. I would rather always stay on the side of caution and say something before you start experiencing motoric difficulties, let's say.
Absolutely. I was interested what learnings you might pass on to rope bottoms who have maybe, you know, a medium level of experience of 4 or 5 years, something like that.
The first thing is, and I find that goes for rope bottoms as well as for riggers, is if you're inexperienced, tie with, or not as experienced, tie with someone who's more experienced than you. And that goes both ways, because you will A, learn a lot from that, and B, you have an easier time keeping yourself safe. So when you're an inexperienced rigger, tie with an experienced model who can account for themselves, who know what's going on, who know how long it will take you to get them to down on the ground, and so on and so forth. And if you're an inexperienced rope model, tie with someone who is able to keep you safe, as in who's able to adapt the harnesses to your needs and doesn't overestimate your abilities and doesn't have an ego from overexcitement or whatever, and keeps you on the less risky side of things, and has the wisdom to do so, even if people might be very excited and want to do all the things. And, you know, nowadays with Instagram, people come with pictures and say, I want to do this, you know, which always makes me cringe a lot because it doesn't tell you anything, really. There's a pretty shape in that picture, but we don't know how that shape came about, what the model felt, and so on and so forth. So I just always say when I see that, it's like you're just showing me one note out of a symphony. And that's my first advice. The second is be picky. Don't throw yourself into it and try to experience everything at once. You know, don't jump on every occasion. Sit back and watch and contemplate and take your time. Choose the people you want to tie with carefully, not because they might be dangerous or anything, but you want to get to know them. You want to get to know their style, right? You want to see whether you click on a rope level, whether you're congruent to each other. You also want to, I find, know to at least a certain degree their conflict management. How do they react when things don't go perfectly? And how's their aftercare? If someone needs a lot of aftercare, but you're tying with someone who's not really comfortable with being very cuddly or giving you a lot of aftercare, the rope might be great, but you might still feel a little bit depleted afterwards or left alone because that doesn't meet your needs. By doing this and being a bit picky and choosing the people you want to tie with carefully, you don't undersell yourself. So your self-worth and your self-image is a different one over time. We are talking people who want to stay in rope for a while. And you also don't undervalue the people you tie with. You don't jump on anyone who can tie some form of a friction and say, I want to tie with you just because you've got rope in your hands, but you really also kind of appreciate the person that you want to tie with. That's the next thing I think is for rope models, is have a good reason you want to tie with someone, because as a rigger, you don't want to, you want to be valued as well. You don't want to be the person who just provides an experience. Yeah, you want to do something together. You want to have the chance to be vulnerable with the other person on both sides. And you make yourself very vulnerable when you're a rigger. You offer something, you offer cookies, and you might be rejected. The stuff that you offer might not be received the way you wanted it. So you're making yourself vulnerable. And I think that should be respected as well. And there should be thought about that. I see a lot of people, a lot of models who don't really think about that. They kind of think more about their own experience with it.
You talked about perimenopause earlier, and as women of a particular age, that becomes something which personally was a complete shock to me. I had no idea that there was any such thing as perimenopause when I first, encountered it. And I think that's changing. And certainly obviously I don't live in the UK, but my understanding female friends is this more of a topic right now. But I'm really interested in how it intersects with rope for you and how it has impacted in a positive or negative way your rope experience.
First of all, the first really big aha moment I had was when we were trying for a baby and I had IVF. And that was the point when I realized that hormones actually govern us. Everything that we perceive and that we can do and can't do is to a very, very, very large degree governed by hormones. And I'm also very sensitive when it comes to hormonal fluctuations. And in IVF, you flatline your body's hormones to then go in with a very high dose of artificial hormones that make sure that you ripen as many eggs as you possibly can. And this is like a lot of other hormonal treatments for women is not really made to measure to the person you are and to the body and to the weight and to the height and to your sensitivities. It's just one solution fits all. For me, it was for sure like an avalanche of hormones flooding me. And in that process, I remember that while I was having this hormonal treatment, also because I didn't want to be in that trying for babies kind of weird bubble all the time, I needed to break out of that as well. I went on a workshop in Copenhagen with Ricardo Nakawan, and it was my first Ricardo workshop that I've actually ever did. And I went with a very good friend, and it was one of the toughest things I've done, because I was hormonally all over the place, and I still had to do a full weekend workshop that was in that situation fairly demanding. So yeah, I understood, okay, certain hormonal situations do certain things to you. So the same thing goes for us now when we're in perimenopause and we have fluctuations that are not really as nicely balanced anymore. I found that my pain tolerance decreases massively when I'm in certain parts of my cycle, especially when progesterone levels are high. I'm useless and I feel useless, and my body reacts as if I would be pregnant. So I've got lots of water retention. Whatever I eat gets stored as fat. Nothing is going to be burned off anymore. And I might have cycles like this that are really bad, 2-3 months in a row, and I feel really, really rotten. And then I might have a few months that are absolutely fine, and I feel on top of the world again, and I feel fit again, and I feel strong again. And that makes it so difficult in perimenopause, because it becomes really unpredictable. It's not like, okay, it just has decreased, now I can kind of zoom in on that and work with that situation. It kind of goes up and down, up and down, up and down. And you don't really know when it's coming on or when your progesterone levels are exceptionally high in a circle until you're in the middle of it and realize. I think risk perception is also something that changed quite a lot, and also is maybe a hormonal thing that changed. But my skin becomes thinner. The walls of my cells are becoming thinner. How does that affect the pressure that's on my blood cells and on everything else? And do I have to worry about, I don't know, blood clots forming when I have too many bruises? And what can I do and still can't do? Can I still have, you know, heavy neck rope sessions, or is that maybe too risky for me at some point? And I don't have answers to that, but I know that all of a sudden, whereas beforehand I didn't really think much about it because I felt strong, now I'm like, now things are creeping in and I'm saying, okay, I'm not quite sure how this is going to affect me. And I'm sure certain things do affect you, from easier bruising to all sorts of other things. So there will be other repercussions. And then I just think, okay, if I do these things, like staying upside down for an extended period of time and having, you know, a weight around my neck or whatever, I just do that when I think it's really worth doing that with a person that I think is worth doing it with, rather than just go for the experience on a jam night like that.
Anna, in conclusion, if we want to achieve longevity in rope, you mentioned already possibly reducing our risk profile. You mentioned keeping a routine of regular exercise. In your case, you cited yoga. Are there other tips you can give people who are getting in their 40s, their 50s, and want to keep as much of a rope future as they can?
I think everything that you would do to stay healthy and active and well in, you know, and aging well in normal life is the same, but doing rope with. And if you don't have a very active sports routine or whatever, you then just have to adapt, I think, whatever you do in your normal life. So if you want to do rope and you want to keep doing rope that is challenging, maybe you want to stay fit for that. But if you say, I'm happy to do rope that is physically not that challenging, I think then you can, it really is dependent on what you're willing to sacrifice on one hand or the other. If you don't want to sacrifice like physically demanding rope, then I think you have to take care of your body and put more time into taking care of your body by doing yoga or other fitness. I find yoga extremely positive for rope. More than staying fit physically is thinking about your mental approach to things. Shibari is a dance of the soul, and for me it actually is all about surrender. We surrender to the other, to the moment, and ultimately to what is. We are taking emotional risks by opening up and showing ourselves. That's, I find, where the true magic starts to happen, because that form of surrender sets us free and makes us very happy deep down in our hearts. And that form of magic can happen with all sorts of rope. It can be very simple rope, right? And can be adapted to anyone's abilities. I found throughout my rope journey, there's a kind of really beautiful circle starting to form, wherein I now start to simplify the rope and become more minimalistic with the rope in order to focus more on other aspects that are at play. And I call Shibari a practice because, at least to me, it has strong spiritual qualities, right? I find these qualities because not often in life do we have the chance to practice surrender in a safe and loving setting like we do with rope bondage. And we can practice and prepare ourselves, and like in meditation, where we practice surrender, we can practice a little bit at least for the inevitable facts of life that we at some point all have to surrender to, but then we don't have a chance to kind of tap out or you leave the play space and come back to a different reality. Topics like aging, illness, loss, trauma, and death are all things that we ultimately have to surrender to. I guess for exactly that reason, I'm interested in interdisciplinary approaches to rope. And I've looked into a few other disciplines and asked myself what I can adapt to rope. For example, I brought some form of the Meisner technique, which is an acting technique, to rope, to shine a light onto the nonverbal interactions that are at play. And I found that it's very, very powerful when you consciously shine a light on all the layers that are at play when we tie, but are never being put into words that are being spoken. It can be a very, very powerful exercise. And I also explore authentic movement and bodywork and some other disciplines because I feel it can bring a very, very powerful emotional component to our rope practice. And so that's an exciting path I'm walking on at the moment. And Sanford Meisner, who's that acting teacher who developed his Meisner technique, said, acting is living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. And for me, the same is true for Shibari as well, because tying is also living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So try to know yourself and try to be honest with yourself in terms of maybe there are some things that you don't want to risk anymore, or your body tells you, maybe not at the moment, then listen to that. Don't sacrifice your physical integrity for the little bit of rope fun you might or might not have with that. And just be confident in trusting your instincts and what your body wants to tell you. I think you have to fine-tune that a little bit more after over 40, mid-40s, because you kind of have to work harder for everything. And this is the other thing, is like, and I think I'm very happy that this has become more of a public discussion and debate, the perimenopause and menopause, because I also think people tying should be aware and should have respect for older rope bottoms, because they have to work harder for the stuff that they are doing than people in their mid-20s. And they maybe risk a bit more, but they also will be able to give a lot more in terms of depth of engagement and experience and emotional connection, I think, just because, you know, there's a bit more life experience in there that comes out.
That makes a lot of sense. And now for our listeners who would like to know more about you and follow your work, where is the best place to find you on the internet?
The best place is either my website, which is anna-noctuel.com, or on Instagram, which is anna-noctuel as well. On FetLife, I'm anna-noctuel also, but I'm very rarely on FetLife these days. So you might not get a very, very quick answer on that. I, you know, my feed tends to always take 15 minutes to reload because I haven't been on there for months. So yeah, I think my website or Instagram are the first ports of call.
Okay, and do you have any projects at the present or in the near future?
I'm teaching at Anatomy. I've also interestingly enough in London, but I see that in other places as well. Yoga studios start to become interested in Shibari, and some of the yoga studios in London approached me whether I could offer yoga Shibari classes in there. And I'm doing that with a friend who's also a yoga teacher. That kind of fits really well in that framework, which is nice. And otherwise, I teach privately a lot. So people, I teach and also co-teach privately. And I teach both sides of the rope from the outside or from the rigging perspective, but also from a modeling perspective. And students come to me because I can keep them safe because they have the freedom to then just focus on working on their skills rather than having to also work towards models, limitations, abilities, and abilities. That's a lot of fun, and it's very rewarding.
Anna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing all those things with us.
Thank you very much for having me. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening.
And have fun tying.